Nerds, you're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode!
Welcome back, you're listening to the Nerdcore podcast, the podcast reviews of movies and talks that nerd shit. This is episode 224. And it is your new news. Damn, wow.
new news.
No, yes. It is your nerd news of the week. Kind of, because you know if anything breaks, we're going to cover it. Along with a nice review at the end of the episode, because we're really behind and we're trying to play catch up here. Sorry, patrons. You guys are literally going to get 3 mini-pods, and that is going to be it. Like, there's no way we're not putting up 3 mini-pods this week.
Hold the mini-pods.
Or just like,
can we just have one big runoff mini-pod?
Why don't we just do like one, like an hour and a half episode of mini-pod?
Yeah, just instead of mini-pod, it's like medium pod, you know?
Yeah, it's like an actual full-length episode. Look, what's it called? As always, it's your nerd, you're gonna hear to host the show alongside my wonderful co-host, Brad, a.k.a. Young Yoda. How you doing today?
Doing well, Raul, doing well. It's late, let's get this done. I'm sleepy.
Yeah, tonight we'll be doing the news, box office, trailer talk, and then at the end we are doing a review, spoiler review, of The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford for 2000 Film Month, because we missed out last week. But don't worry, that's not the only review this week. We have the third movie of 2000 Film Month, a.k.a. the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind review, going up on Saturday. And then tomorrow, you get to listen to an interview with Zach Stentz, writer of Rim of the World. We're going to go ahead and talk about that movie with him tomorrow. So keep your eyes peeled, my friends, and your ears open. Let's go ahead and get into this, though, Brad. This is something I really want to talk about. I'm glad that we were so late on the news, but this is something I need to talk about. All right. Per Variety. Breaking news, my friends. Robert Pattinson to play the Batman for Matt Reeves and Warner Brothers in an exclusive for Justin Kroll. Here it goes. Here goes nothing, my friends. He's going from sex symbol to bat symbol. Sources tell Variety that Robert Pattinson is in negotiations to play the Batman in Matt Reeves' forthcoming superhero film, which hits theaters June 25th, 2021. Well, sources say it's not...
Wait. I have a question. Mm-hmm. When was Robert Pattinson a sex symbol?
Edward Cullen? I don't know. I don't know, man.
He's shiny. Okay.
Whatever. Well, sources say it's not yet a done deal. Pattinson is the top choice and is expected to close shortly. Warner Brothers had no comment. Pre-production on the Warner Brothers DC Comics pick is expected to start this summer. Reeves, the filmmaker behind the last two Planet of the Apes sequels, assumed Batman directing duties from Ben Affleck in January 2017 and has been developing the elusive project ever since. Affleck and Warner Bros. Began discussing the actor-director leaving the Caped Crusader behind following Justice League, allowing Reeves to pick his own Bruce Wayne. Reeves will produce the Batman with his Planet of the Apes collaborator Dylan Clark. Pattinson was cast even as Reeves continues to polish a final version of the script. A former Twilight heartthrob who has successfully turned to art house fare, Pattinson, 33 years old, becomes the second youngest actor to ever play Batman on the big screen after Christian Bale, who was 31 when Batman Begins premiered in 2005. Warner Brothers, in giving Reeves plenty of time to develop the script, is hoping for the latest iteration of the DC icon to is done right, following the disappointments of Batman v Superman and Justice League. No official start date has been set for the Batman. Insiders tell Variety filming could start in late 2019, early 2020, Pattinson is about to shoot another film for WB, Christopher Nolan's event movie, co-starring John David Washington, which is set to open July 17, 2020. Pattinson has a total of 4 films opening this year, beginning with Claire Denis, High Life. He also appears in Robert Eggers' The Lighthouse, which just got some amazing reviews at Cannes Film Festival, y'all. The King for Netflix and Waiting for the Barbarians. He is read by WME, the Curtis Brown Group, and 3X Entertainment. Yeah, The Lighthouse just got a really good reviews at Cannes Film Festival. And then that one, he's in that movie with Willem Dafoe. And the lady who did that movie, she did The Witch for A24, and this one's going to be distributed under A24 as well. So, look.
I see a review in our future.
Oh, 100%, man. We are doing that. You know, just like we did a review for Madong Sek, Brad, because of his casting in Eternals, I'm imploring ourselves, and we're going to do this. We're going to go watch Good Time. I'm going to have to watch that again, but we're going to watch Good Time and review that to prepare ourselves for Pattinson and his eventual role. Deadline then did an update to this article saying that he's not the only one who's at the top of the list. Right now, Nicholas Hoult is out there. But honestly, man, look, I'm going to go only off what I'm seeing right now. And knowing the career that Pattinson has had ever since Twilight dropped, after Twilight, I have nothing wrong with this casting. I actually really like this casting. I can't say that he'll be a great Batman because we haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen it yet, so we're going to wait for that. But in this case, if you were to ask me, Raul, do you think Robert Pattinson is fit enough for a role like this, and does he deserve it? Yes, and hell yes. He's been busting his ass in the independent movies, and he's been making a name for himself again. And I think that's why I'm rooting for him, because I love an underdog story here. And, you know, with Reeves in the behind the camera directing him, I think we could get a really, really good movie, especially knowing how much time Reeves has been developing this script and, you know, the care he's been putting on it. You know, signs are leading for it to be great, but I'm going to do what Brad always says, and I'm going to wait for the trailer, because Brad gave his thoughts on Affleck, and he ate shit with those words. So, you know, I'm going to just go ahead and just say that I like Robert Pattinson being casted, but I am waiting for the trailer to make my full thoughts on this. And, you know, even when the trailer drops, I'm not going to have a big, most concrete thoughts. It's just going to be like, okay, I want to see this movie, and I want to see what he'll do with the Batman. But, you know, the full thoughts will be when we watch the movie.
Brad? Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I talked a lot of shit about Batfleck. I'm not making that mistake again, because Batfleck going to be in my second favorite Batman behind Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I'm not talking shit. Yeah. Until I won't even talk shit during the trailer. After the movie, I will talk shit if it deserves being talked shit about.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? We're going to watch that Pattinson film next week or the week after, once we're all settled here, because, you know, a lot of people think that Twilight ruined his career, but I mean, he really picked it up after that, man. Like, he's made some really, really good movies.
Well, he definitely went down the indie pathway. It's kind of funny. He did this huge blockbuster, which, you know, everyone in some form or another really hates. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it. We all make fun of it. And he decided to go indie, which probably was his best career move, because he just got away from all that shit.
Yeah. And now he's coming back to the blockbusters, and we'll see, man. I mean, look, you know, somebody like Nolan wouldn't cast Pattinson if he didn't see something in him, right?
I mean, you got to respect, Reeves' vision on this.
Mm-hmm.
So, although they are doing the villains as the Penguin and Catwoman, I read. So it's not the story I want.
I'm hearing, but then actually, again,
I have everything.
Brad, I'm hearing that it's actually more villains. You know, they're two of the ones that might be coming out. Well, Penguin is basically done deal, of course, apparently. But I'm hearing that there's more there, actually.
That might be a hush storyline then.
Yeah, I really, Brad, honestly, I wouldn't mind them doing a like array of villains as he's trying doing his detective work and going after all these villains and all having to lead back to the Penguin at the end, and that's who he has to fight. But honestly, Brett, I see no problem with Reeves tackling Penguin first, because he's going to play it safe. So if this movie does really well, we will definitely get some, you know, out of this world canon, you know, villain like Hush or the Court of Owls and stuff like that. Or, you know, the...
And what piques my interest, I know Hush is a long shot, but they are doing the animated movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or did. It's coming out on DVD, I think, here soon.
Pretty soon, yeah.
So,
be able to watch it. We'll be able to watch it on our DC Universe, by the way.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah. So, yeah, Brad, I honestly, man, you got to respect the vision for Reeves. You also got to respect the vision of Nolan that he was able to cast him in his next movie. So, you know, those are two directors who I don't think they would cast somebody that they think wouldn't do a good job on their film. So that's going to be the last thing I'm going to say, is that I'm going to trust what Reeves is doing with this movie, and I really can't wait. Plus, the guy has, Pattinson has the young bat look in physical, you know, attributes.
Well, and that's what I've been seeing on Twitter and everything. Everyone's calling for a Terry McGinnis Batman Beyond and bringing back Michael Keaton as old Batman, but I think that's very, very, that's a Hail Mary of sorts.
Yeah. That's like a one-off, like the Joker, Elseworld story, yeah. What's it called? Yeah, but look, that's all we're going to say for this. And, you know, if anything comes up, we're going to go ahead and keep on reporting for y'all. But let's go ahead and go into the box office report for this weekend. You know, this was a wonderful weekend. Finally, Avengers was dethroned. But, Brad, I want to point out something about Avengers. It is $173 million short from topping Avatar at the worldwide box office. It already beat Avatar at the domestic. Now it has $173 million to top Avatar in the worldwide box office.
Come on, China. Take it down.
All right. Let's look at the bottom five, Brad. Look, I am very much still surprised that Longshot is able to keep a spot here at $3,341,917 at number seven, Brad. Holy crap.
You gotta remind me, what is that movie again?
It's a Seth Rogen comedy.
Oh, yeah, that one. Okay. I know which one you're talking about.
That's
kind of remarkable. It is Seth Rogen, though.
Mm-hmm. Anything that sticks out to you in the bottom five, Brad?
Ugly Dolls.
Still kicking it with $1 million.
Still kicking it up there. I mean, I thought they were just toys in Target. I didn't know it was a full movie. So.
Oh, God, Brad. Well, look, let's go to the number five. I don't know what movie this is, but The Hustle made $6,139,638. A Dog's Journey debuted the last weekend at $8,030,085. Number three was Detective Pikachu, falling from the number two spot to number three with $25,108,159. That's really, really good second week. I believe that's half a drop, Brad.
Yeah, that's not bad, because they opened up at $53 million, which everyone kind of expected to open up around $35 million.
Yeah.
So, hard to get a second week like this. Although, I mean, I even went to the theater for this, so it's not surprising.
Yeah. Avengers Endgame at number two with $29,973,505. No Captain Marvel in the top 10, by the way, guys. That's completely off now, the top 10. But still, that was making pocket change at this point. So is Avengers Endgame, of course. But it has a nice little stretch to go to beat Avatar. And then at number one, making its debut last weekend, was John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum at $56,818,067. I watched this film. I liked it more than Chapter 2, not more than Chapter 1. That's still my favorite. But I can see why a lot of people came out to watch this one. It was a really, really fun movie. Can't say that I enjoyed a lot of things about it, but I do. I know why people went out to see this one.
Well, it's John Wick.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's probably Keanu Reeves. I'm not going to say best performance, but it's like the character that was written perfectly for him.
Yeah. Plus, the choreography is just amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Keanu Reeves, Matrix, you know. Mm-hmm. You're always going to get good choreography whenever he's in a movie.
Yeah.
Except maybe Speed. They didn't have much choreography.
Yeah. But, Brad, this weekend will be a tough one, Brad. What's it called? I'm going to check what the box office tracking for Aladdin is, but, you know, this is about to, and, you know, the reviews have been out, you know, the first reactions, and holy crap, Brad, people are really, really liking this for,
I think the Will Smith Blue Genie threw a lot of people off. I still think it's going to throw a lot of people off. But you know, if they're coming out with good reviews, that's good for Disney.
Yeah. So, I believe, I don't know, Ad Astra's not coming out. I'm sorry. Aladdin is coming out, and also Brightburn? Yes, but Aladdin is, oh my God. Aladdin is tracking at an $85 million opening weekend, Brad. Is this where we're going to see, is this where we're going to see the Solo and Infinity War debacle again? You know, Disney competing with Disney here?
No, I don't think it's going to be in terms of that, just because you had the fanboys run out and just totally destroy Solo. Mm-hmm. But I don't see an 85 opening weekend.
I'm
going to
go
Aladdin.
With 75 million.
I mean, that seems more reasonable to me. 75 million, even like, I'd say even 65 million would be reasonable.
Yeah,
Because let's look at the live action. Now, you can't really relate Dumbo, but that's what we have to go off of. Mm-hmm. And Dumbo, it's not as popular as Aladdin, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So you can expect more from it.
But also, if we look at the marketing, this one had way more marketing than Dumbo did.
Yes, and I mean, you got a lot of eyes on it from just Will Smith being the genie.
Yeah, so a lot of people are going to be like, you know, I want to go check what this is all about. You know, I didn't like the trailers, but I still have the chance for them to really show me what's up, per se.
Yeah, I know most of us wish Robin Williams could have done the role, but rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Yeah, look, I'm saying $75 million for Aladdin. John Wick will fall to number two with a good old 45 at least.
I think it drops a little further.
25?
No, not that far. I'm going to say like in the 35 range.
I'll go with that with you. Detective Pikachu, I mean, what's it called? Avengers will be down at like the 15 at least. Detective Pikachu down to like 10 or 8.
I think Detective Pikachu holds though, and Avengers falls below that.
Really?
That's what I think. I think you're going to get more kids going to see that. Hell, yeah. You get free cards.
Yeah, well, we know where the international markets will be hitting. Aladdin and Detective Pikachu are going to be big internationally. And I've said that 1,000 times. I said that there's no way that domestic markets go as far as they should go for Detective Pikachu, because Pokemon is bigger in the international markets by far. And I think that this is being marketed more as a big spectacle, at least for Aladdin, in around the world. But I feel like I'm feeling it in my bones, man. I think it's going to make a big hit internationally, but sadly it's not going to be a big hit here in the United States. I don't know, it's just something I'm feeling, but nostalgia might just prove me wrong.
I don't know, I'd rather see the cartoon version of Aladdin.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go watch it either. I'll probably watch it on a discount Tuesday or something, but I'm not watching full price, man. I'm not going to the theaters to really want to go see this. The one that I'm wanting to see is the week after that. It's going to be Godzilla King of the Monsters. That's what I want to watch.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So, you know, look, this weekend's going to be crazy, and I think it's going to be a big weekend for the box office, and we'll have that ready for you all next week. But in the meantime, that's been the Box Office Report. As always, it's always so much fun. Let's go ahead and go into some little mini news stories here, my friends. I'm going to go ahead and get one right out of the way, that one that does not have a link. Lionsgate announced today that May 21st, 2021, we'll see the next installment in the John Wick Chapter series, John Wick Chapter 4. Keanu Reeves coming back, of course.
They could have held the news off on this for a little bit. Like, you know, maybe like a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Look, Brad.
Just saying.
I'm going to say something that is pretty unpopular because a lot of people really like this movie, the Chapter 3. The farther they go, the more uninterested I get with these movies. The plot seems so irrelevant and boring now that it's kind of like being milked to me. If they don't do four as great as the last three, I feel like they're going down the Fast and Furious route.
Hey, amen. Amen. Wait till they kill his cat.
Wait until they kill his goldfish.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, look, man, there's another person that's making
the Thanos snap. The Thanos snap and his dog. And it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, shit. You know, we're going to go ahead and go next to another piece of news. Another actor's been making the rounds by developing a reboot for a franchise with Lionsgate. And that is Mr. Chris Rock, as he is rebooting Saw franchise from Variety.com's own Dave McNary. Chris Rock and Lionsgate are collaborating on a Saw spinoff. I've been a fan of Saw since the first film in 2004. Rock said, I'm excited by the opportunity to take this to a really intense and twisted new place. The franchise revolves around the fictional character John Kramer, also called the Jigsaw Killer or Jigsaw, who traps victims in situations that test their will to live. Tobin Bell has portrayed Jigsaw in all 8 films. The low-cost titles have been highly profitable for Lionsgate, grossing nearly $1 billion worldwide. Mark Berg, Oren Coles, and Greg Hoffman produced all the Saw films. Joe Drake, chairman of Lionsgate Motion Picture Group, made the announcement on Thursday. The new movie will be released on October 23rd, 2020. When Chris Rock came to us and described in chilling detail the fantastic vision that reimagines and spins off the world of the notorious Jigsaw Killer, we were all in, said Drake. Saw is one of the highest-grossing horror franchises of all time and is one of Lionsgate's most successful film series. This upcoming film will still be as mind-bending and intense as all the previous Saw films. Chris conceived the idea that it will be completely reverential to the legacy of the material while reinvigorating the brand with his wit, creative vision, and passion for the classic horror franchise. This pick will be produced by Berg and Coles and directed by Darren Lynn Bozeman, who helmed Saw 2, 3, and 4. The screenplay is based on a story conceived by Rock and written by Peter Goldfinger and Josh Stolberg. The movie will be executive produced by Rock, Daniel Hefner, and the original creators of Saw, James Wan and Leigh Whannell. I was about to get worried. I'm like, you're not going to have Wan involved in this? You're like, you have to have him involved in some way or another, right?
You'd think.
Yeah. Chris wants to put his own spin on the Saw franchise, and the way Eddie Murphy put a completely fresh perspective on the buddy cop films with 48 Hours, Sarah Berg, and Coles. This new Saw is going to be an event film in the making for horror fans. It will have all the twists and turns and hardcore layers that our fans expect, directed by one of the masters of the craft, Darren Lynn Bozeman. We can't wait to get started. Wow. Okay, so... Oh, man, Brad. Look, first of all, good on Chris Rock for wanting to tackle something else other than comedy, Brad.
Yeah, I mean, I give the guy credit. I love Chris Rock to death. My question is, like, it's kind of like when people bring to me, like, hey, let's make another Final Destination movie. And I'm like, no, let's not. It's just, you know, what else?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, before you were cut out in silence, reiterate what you were talking about, Brent.
That you're
looking forward to what he can develop.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what Chris Rock can develop. But again, it's Saw movies, so I'm not looking forward that much.
Yeah. Look, I don't know if I need a Saw spinoff. I don't even know if I want another Saw movie. I agree with you, Brad. It's the whole Final Destination debate. Really, do we need another Final Destination movie? We don't.
You know, after the 9th movie, it's like fucking done. Yeah. So it's like the Fast and the Furious. I mean... I'll still go watch it, you know. I'm like you. I'll go to the Dollar Theater for that. Unless it's Sean Hobbs, I'm definitely not going to see any of that. But, you know, it's just like, can we just finish it up, call it a day,
mm-hmm.
and actually make something that's not a sequel?
Yeah. How about we just have Chris Rock create an actual original horror film? If he wants to do horror so bad, why can't we just have Chris Rock have, like, why don't you just produce a film of his, like a new original horror film from him?
Which I think would be excellent.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, oh, good Lord, I clicked the link on the, for the next piece of news to the source, and it's all in Mandarin. I do not know how to speak, read Mandarin. So,
ooh,
going back to the original tweet. Yeah, but look, final thoughts on that, Brad. I'm willing to see what he can do, but I'm not clamoring to go watch a Saw remake. A reboot.
No.
Yeah, just like I'm not entirely excited about a Child's Play reboot.
No. Even with the voice of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. So look, this next one is really, really interesting, Brad. From Gavin Feng on Twitter. Gavin Feng 97, that's their @. Chinese actress Li Gong claimed that Disney's live-action film Mulan has the biggest budget ever for the studio, with $300 million-plus, hashtag Mulan, and is via Weibo.com. If you click that link, it goes to an interview with the actress, and it's all in Mandarin, so I can't read or speak or understand it, so I can't translate, but I will trust what this source tweet says. Brad, when you read $300 million-plus budget, first of all, that's huge. That ain't messing around money. That's like Hobbit budget, you know? That's a big budget, Brad.
Yeah, that's a big bet by Disney that this is going to be a hit. And I don't question it's going to be a hit, but $300
million?
Mm-hmm. That's money, man.
That ain't bugging around money, bro.
No, that's like Avengers money. That's like, you know, and for them just to come out with live action Mulan and be like $300 million seems kind of crazy to me. Because, let's face it, the Avengers, you had movie after movie after movie. Mm-hmm. So everybody was clamoring to see it. I mean, I think people love Mulan. Mm-hmm, there's no question about that. And there's going to be people clamoring for it. But $300 million is huge.
We also don't know how many of these were reshoots. What's it called? So I don't know what's going on with that. You know, I don't know how much those reshoots cost. Because remember, the reason that, the reason that, you know, it was delayed, it was because they had to go under reshoots, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I, what's it called? Wait, I'm here trying to fact check this, because I remember this being that they were going to reshoot it, but because we were supposed to get Mulan last year, if I'm correct, or this year, but I remember hearing something about the reshoots, but look, man, there is no absolute doubt in my mind that they will do, what's it called, somehow make this money back. But Disney has to be really, really confident in this movie to put, what's it called, $300 million in for this film.
Yeah, it's a big bet. I don't know if I was too, I would take that risk, but it's Disney. So apparently they think they have a hit on their hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hold on, man. I'm trying to fact check this because I don't want to be spreading any wrong things. Because it was pushed back. Okay, so NBC News. You know, this movie comes out next year, by the way, guys. For people who don't know. This is the one remake that I actually do want to see just because I'm trying to go support my boy, Mushu. The greatest dragon ever. What the hell is this? Okay. Welcome to NBC News. Please support our journalism by allowing ads. Okay, I'll allow ads. Let me just, God, man, I'm just trying to get some information here. All right. So let me see. Disney announced a change as part of several schedule adjustments, during an earlier release date for Avengers Infinity War. Changed the multiple title films. Other changes included the Pixar animated. Okay. The English language version of the original Mulan. So nothing about reshoots, but they had hired new writers they had to rewrite the final script, so no reshoots, but they did have to rewrite the script. So that doesn't really do anything to the production budget. So, look, then I'm just going to stick with my thing. They must be really confident in this movie, Brad.
Yeah, that's all I can... All I can go with, I mean, that's a huge budget for, you know, basically a remake.
Yeah, I don't... What is the budget for The Lion King? Because that is a big one as well. King remake. Sorry. 2019, Lion King 2019. No budget in here, but there's no way this is not like 100 to 2. There's no way this isn't like 150 to 200 million budget, Brad. For The Lion King, at least. There's no way.
How much?
There's no budget on the Wikipedia page, but there is no way that that there's no way that this movie, The Lion King remake, is not 150 million to a 200 million budget.
Well, considering like Aladdin and now Mulan being 300 million, it wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, look, I thought they were, yeah, because they were saying that that The Lion King was supposed to be the most expensive, but the cost was in 2019 Lion King. 177 million to make this one. But that's comparing that to 300 million for Mulan, dude? That's crazy though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at World's Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End cost them 300 million and Tangled cost them 260 million and then what's it called the updated version of Rapunzel cost them that one Tangled was 260, but they made 591.8 million off that. Look, man, I think that Disney is in their right to really take the risk with this one, but I don't know if this is going to really do returns like that unless you have some amazing marketing.
Unless Disney's using it, they're basically going to make their money back from the film, and they're going to stick that on Disney Plus and get people to subscribe.
Yeah, man. But, I'm actually excited for Mulan. So, that's really interesting. And we're going to go ahead and move on to the last piece of news before we do the trailer talk and then the review of The Assassination of Jesse James. From Deadline.com, from Mike Flanagan Jr., Kerry Skoglund to direct 6-part The Falcon and the Winter Soldier miniseries with Anthony Mackie, Sebastian Stan, Daniel Brühl, and Emily Van Camp. Exclusive, Kerry Skoglund has been set to direct the 6-part Disney Plus miniseries The Falcon and the Winter Soldier with Avengers Endgame's Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan. Sources told Captain America Civil War's Daniel Brühl and Emily Van Camp are also in talks to join. The miniseries will air in August 2020. Daniel Brühl played Zemo, the villain, Brad. I don't know, remember his name. And then Emily Van Camp played Sharon Carter. I'd heard that Mackie's accepting the shield from Captain America at the end. Oh, well, sorry, guys. A spoiler warning there. I heard that Mackie's accepting the shield from Captain America at the end of Avengers Endgame will figure into the miniseries, but the studio has no comment on where it goes. Brühl played Zemo in Captain America Civil War, Skoglund is the Emmy-nominated BAFTA-winning director, showrunner, and CEO of Mad Rabbit, a Red Arrow Studios company which launched in 2016. She has directed episodes of The Handmaid's Tale, The Point Blank of AMC's NOS 4A2, starring Zachary Quinto, and the pilot block of Starz The Rock. She also serves as a pilot block director and executive producer of Showtime's upcoming limited series The Loudest Voice, airing in June, starring Russell Crowe and Roger Ailes, and Naomi Watts as Gretchen Carlson. She was an executive producer on History's Sons of Liberty. She's also done shows such as Condor, The Borgias, Penny Dreadful.
Bourgeoisie.
Bourgeoisie was, it's B-O-R-G-I-A-S, Brad. Boardwalk Empire, The Killing, The Walking Dead, and Fear the Walking Dead. Under the Dome, Vikings, Power, The Americans, and House of Cards and The Punisher for Netflix. God, she's done a lot of works, man. But look, I'm pretty sure she'll do a great job on this series, for sure. Someone with all those credits, like, she's been working around so many other genres, I just still don't care about this series.
I was going to say, you can throw as much news as you want at me about this, and I still don't care.
Like, I really don't. Honestly,
man. Now, if you had a Rocky Raccoon in the Winter Soldier,
I
might see that.
Yeah. A Pawn Stars version of Rocket just selling different weapons and stuff that he finds, it would be great. You know, I really don't care about this.
I like
man.
That idea.
I'm so like sorry, man. Like, you know, I really want to support the things that are coming out in the MCU, especially because they're doing the whole streaming service thing, and we'll see how it interconnects with the whole broader world of the MCU. But I don't care about Falcon and Winter Soldier. I really don't.
Yeah, I'll at least watch the first episode of Loki. I don't think I'll watch the episode of this.
Yeah. I can't wait to see Falcon as Captain America in the movies. But I just don't know why we're getting a series. I feel like we should concentrate on him being in the movies. Honestly, man, I'm sorry. Like, you know, these are two of the most uninteresting characters to me. They have a chance to change it for me by making Falcon a really good Captain America, which I will take. But with Bucky, I'm, like, so uninterested in Bucky. It's like, you know, I just, what else is there to do with him?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And also, I don't understand the bringing back of two, you know, villains from Civil War. You know, I thought that Zemo was dead. I thought T'Challa clapped him, but apparently he didn't. What's the whole point of bringing Sharon Carter? I don't know, man. This stuff is confusing, but we'll see later on. But this series should start production very soon. I was here in August, so. You know, we'll get Loki first, we'll get this one after, and then hopefully we'll get WandaVision after, another one that I don't care about. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see, Brad, honestly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Let's go ahead and move on to some trailer talk, Brad. You ready?
I'm ready.
Holy crap, we got a surprise Westworld Season 3 trailer ahead of the premiere of Game of Thrones Season 8. It was focusing on Aaron Carter, and then at the end, we got a nice look at Dolores. Dolores. Look, man, Westworld Season 2 ended.
Do you mean Aaron Paul?
Yeah, no, Aaron. Oh, I said Aaron Carter?
Yeah.
So sorry. Aaron Paul.
It's late.
It's late. Yeah. Worry. Aaron Paul, and then Dolores was at the end, but I don't remember. Season 2 was so weird that. I thought that Dolores was Tessa Thompson's character. So who's actually that body that was originally Dolores now?
Yeah, this whole trailer just has me confused, just like the last season of Westworld. So it's good to know we're starting on the same foot.
Hey, man, but that's what I love about Westworld.
Yeah, you're just sitting there like going... yeah. And you're tilting your head like a dog, and you're just going, what?
Scratching your head like, I will say this looks stunning, like, though. It looks stunning, man. I can't wait to see what they do.
Of course, it's Westworld. Anything in Westworld looks stunning. But it is kind of cool that they're showing what the outside world looks at that
time.
Oh,
yeah. Brad, I was getting a little bit of Blade Runner feels with the vehicles and stuff.
Yeah, it was definitely cool. And yeah. I do think that when we get out to those years, that it will be a Blade Runner film.
Oh yeah, well this year is supposed to be the year that this year is the year that Blade Runner is based on. So, you know, Ridley Scott predicted a little bit too early, but look.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, but look, man, this looks stunning. I can't. I love the fact that I'm confused and that I don't and I know absolutely nothing. That's how it always should be with these trailers. And I loved Season 2 of Westworld. I love Season 1 as well. And I can't wait for Season 3.
I really do hope they have a recap, though. Because, like, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's really been a long time. Give us Samurai World, cowards. Well, look.
They did for like an episode.
Yeah, I know. Let's go ahead and do the final portion here. We're going to go ahead and go into the spoiler review of our movie for Tales of Film Month. Make sure you click off if you don't want spoilers, yada, yada, yada. I'm not doing the countdown. We're just going to go into it. Brad, do you have the information pulled up?
I do.
All right, Brad, go ahead and introduce us to The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward, Robert Ford.
All right, roll. The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward, Robert Ford, is a 2007 American revisionist Western film, written and directed by Andrew Dominique. Adapted from Ron Hansen's 1983 novel of the same name, the film dramatizes the relationship between Jesse James and Robert Ford, focusing on the events that lead up to the
titular
killing. I just like saying tit. What? Filming took place near Calgary, Canmore, Edmonton, Alberta, and Winnipeg, Manitoba. Initially intended for a 2006 release, it was postponed and re-edited for a September 21st, 2007 release date. The film received generally positive reviews and was nominated for 2 Academy Awards, Best Cinematography and Best Supporting Actor for Affleck.
Yeah, man. Initial thoughts. Man, at first I was not liking it, and holy crap, I love this Western epic. It is absolutely everything that a Western should be, but at times there could only be one Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward, Robert Ford, man. I mean, this film does really well in some things. The pacing is kind of here and there, but you know what? The tension is still there, and I really like that. And I think that this has the best performance from Brad Pitt ever.
That is my feeling exactly. And to me, every scene, goddamn, it's beautiful.
Deacon, the cinematography on
this, how he didn't fucking win. I don't think he won.
No, he didn't.
I don't think he won.
The first Oscar he won was with Blade Runner 2049.
Which is total bullshit. How do you not win for this? Every fucking scene, man.
Yeah, man.
Just.
This is he's in God mode behind that camera, dude. Like.
You know, I watched this movie with my father. My father did not like it because of the pacing. Mm-hmm. But to me, that pacing just threw this tension in there. Mm-hmm. Like, any one of them could be killed by Jesse James. Jesse James could be killed at any time. It just overall tension throughout the film. Mm-hmm. And that's what I liked about it. And then you throw on top of that probably some of the best cinematography I've ever seen throughout the whole of a film. Mm-hmm. And then throw on top of that the best acting Brad Pitt has ever done. And then probably the best acting Casey Affleck will ever do.
Well, you know, Manchester by the Sea was a really, really good movie that he was in. And his portrayal of grief and that was really good in that one. But I will agree with you there. I think this is Brad Pitt's best work. I think that this is, you know, this is a performance that nobody else could get out of Brad Pitt except those two directors.
Just great. Just fucking stunning. To me, this film is perfect. That's why I chose it.
I have a little bit of gripes.
It's also one of the I know you have gripes, blah, blah, blah. But to me, the film is perfect. And it's just, you know, I don't think it gets enough credit.
Yeah. I have gripes, and I'm going to talk about some of those gripes. The pacing, you know, it's whatever. You know, it's warranted. The length of the film is warranted as you get past the first act. There's just some characters I feel that are unnecessary, and there's no use to the plot after a certain time, you know? And that really kind of, you know, just kind of feels like, you know, then why are we having these scenes here when some of these characters are not as important as they're led to be?
Which characters are you talking about? Like Dick Little?
Yeah, and the girl, and, you know... Like,
I think for the one for Dick Little, it just shows just how much, you know, of a dick he is. And that really leads into the events that caused Jesse James to go on a killing spree because they basically killed his cousin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just some stuff that just kind of feels like, oh, like, you know, why is it there? You know, Like, why is it there? But overall, I mean, the film is really, really good. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and say that this film is not good. It is incredible. It is a visual masterpiece, man. The fact that Deakins did not win for this is absolutely appalling. But I can name five other films with my fingers that he should have won for. So, you know, yeah. Like,
robbed. Fucking robbed.
He was robbed, dude. He was really robbed. You know what I'm going to do, Brandon? I'm going to go ahead and search up. Do a quick search right here. I'm going to search up who he lost to that year. Because it is absolutely, it's ridiculous that this film would lose. Like, you would, watching this film, you would expect it to win cinematography, right?
Mm-hmm. I would.
Yeah. But 2007, let's see what's up here, man. By the way, budget of $30 million, only made $50 million at the box office.
Oh, of course, There Will Be Blood.
Oh,
which is also on my list of also some of the greatest cinematography.
Yeah, who did the one? Who did the for that one?
Robert L. Swit.
Damn, dude, you lost to There Will Be Blood. Well, that's not a bad movie to lose to, don't you think?
Nah, I mean, if you're gonna lose to, it's There Will Be Blood. Another film my father didn't like, but I loved.
Yeah. he was up against Atonement, The Driving Bell and the Butterfly, and No Country for Old Men. Oh, he got nominated for two films? Damn.
Yep. He's that good. Yeah, but he still lost. Like, motherfucker.
Yeah. It sucks, man, because, you know, he's such a great director. I mean, he's such a great cinematographer. Like, the fact that he lost, and he was nominated for two films. Like, come on, man.
But, I mean, if you're going to lose, at least it was There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. It's funny, he won for Blade Runner, but he run it as Roger E. Deakins now. Not Roger Deakins. I had to put an initial in there.
Had to change his name to win.
Yeah. Roger E. Deakins, I'm sorry. But look, it's great that he was able to win for that one, but for Blade Runner. But, you know, I mean, this film does a lot of things that I really enjoyed. Some of them were, like, you know, the tension. It was the atmosphere. It was the whole plot. Well, and you know, how you knew he was going to be killed, but the tension
you
that
knew,
was building.
The assassination of Jesse James by the coward. Mm-hmm. So we knew what was going to happen by the end.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's great. It's such a great movie that you're just waiting for Jesse James to kill everyone.
Yeah,
and then
just
throw on top of that the music, oh, and it's just all out. Just,
oh my,
you know,
God, what an incredible score, Brad. I mean, talk about a score that really puts you into the atmosphere of the show and the film, and you know, it was an incredible score. I think I messaged you and I said, dude, this score is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
I mean, when I think of 2000 films, I think of this one just because I don't think it gets enough credit it deserves. It's like my other film that I chose, Brick. I don't think that one gets enough credit in the whole noir genre because it's so weird. It is a weird film.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of films like these Western epics don't always get a lot of credit when they deserve it, you know?
And which is sad because this definitely is Brad Pitt's best performance. He is Jesse James.
Yeah. So, Brad, I think we can go into final thoughts. Well, not final thoughts, but kind of just give our final verdict here, right?
10 out of 10. You know it's coming.
Yeah. 8.75 from me. That's all I can give it, my friends. But I think it's one that you guys should definitely go watch, especially. But break it up in between 2 days, my guy, my friends, because it's a long one. It is a long one. Two hours and 40 minutes, I believe.
So yeah, other than Seven Samurai, I think this is the second longest one I've chosen.
Yeah, you cannot complain about my choices anymore, Brad.
Oh, you every movie you choose is over 2 hours, so don't even give me that.
No, not this month. They're all under 2 hours. Even the Patreon mini.
I think that's because I cried enough.
Yeah, well, get ready to cry in this next one. Because on Saturday, Saturday's review will be Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet. Heartbreaking love story. And I can't wait to watch this movie again and cry all over again. Because I always say this, her is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind on steroids. So, until then, we've been having a great time doing an old school episode, but we are fully caught up now, Brad. So,
thank God.
You know what? Shout out to the executive producers. I'm not doing all the other housekeeping. I'm really tired. Go follow Shane on Twitter at XSRRKK Twitch. Journey at IcedMocha_Jorn, JOURN. Grayson Barker at GraysonBarker98 on Instagram. WarlordHeyman98 on Twitter. Rate review. Twitter at TheNerdCore_, Instagram at TheNerdCore. Everything else, you already know Stitch. I love you guys, but it's really late and I got to get up early tomorrow for work. Brad, send him into the podcast void.
All right, Raul, thank you for being host as always. Thank you to all our Patreon supporters, all our listeners. We truly appreciate you. Sorry I sound so tired. It's because I am. And I guess in the next episode, I don't know. Oh, wait, I do know. In the next episode, we have a great interview with the writer of